The Synthesis of Yoga, Sri Aurobindo. Continuing in Part 2, The Yoga of Integral Knowledge, Chapter 14, page 400, The Passive and the Active Brahman. The difficulty which the mental being experiences in arriving at an integral realization of true being and world being may be met by following one or other of two different lines of his self-development. He may evolve himself from plane to plane of his own being and embrace on each successfully his oneness with the world and with Satchidananda, realized as the Purusha and Prakriti, conscious soul and nature soul of that plane, taking into himself the action of the lower grades of being as he ascends. He may, that is to say, work out by a sort of inclusive process of self-enlargement and transformation, the evolution of the material, into the divine or spiritual man. This seems to have been the method of the most ancient sages, of which we get some glimpse in the Rig Veda and some of the Upanishads, notably the Taittiriya Upanishad. He may, on the other hand, aim straight at the realization of pure self-existence on the highest plane of mental being, and from that secure basis realize spiritually, under the conditions of his mentality, the process by which the self-existent becomes all existences, but without that descent into the self-divided, egoistic consciousness, which is a circumstance of evolution in the ignorance. Thus identified with Satchidananda in the universal self-existence as the spiritualized mental being, he may then ascend beyond to the supramental plane of the pure spiritual existence. It is the latter method, the stages of which we may now attempt to trace for the seeker by the path of knowledge. When the sadhaka has followed the discipline of withdrawal from the various identifications of the self with the ego, the mind, the life, the body, he has arrived at realization by knowledge of a pure, still, self-aware existence, one, undivided, peaceful, inactive, undisturbed by the action of the world. The only relation that this self seems to have with the world is that of a disinterested witness, not at all involved in, or affected, or even touched by any of its activities. If this state of consciousness is pushed farther, one becomes aware of a self even more remote from world existence. All that is in the world is, in a sense, in that self, and yet at the same time extraneous to its consciousness, non-existent in its existence, existing only in a sort of unreal mind, a dream, therefore, an illusion. This aloof and transcendent real existence may be realized as an utter self of one's own being. Or the very idea of a self and of one's own being may be swallowed up in it, so that it is only for the mind an unknowable that, unknowable to the mental consciousness, and without any possible kind of actual connection or commerce with world existence. It can even be realized by the mental being as a nihil, non-existence, or void, but a void of all that is in the world, a non-existence of all that is in the world, and yet the only reality. To proceed farther towards that transcendence, by concentration of one's own being upon it, is to lose mental existence and world existence together and cast oneself into the unknowable. The integral yoga of knowledge demands, instead, a divine return upon world existence, and its first step must be to realize the self as the all, sarvam brahma. First, concentrating on the self-existent, we have to realize all of which the mind and senses are aware as a figure of things existing in this pure self that we now are to our own consciousness. This vision of the pure self translates itself to the mind sense and the mind's perception as an infinite reality in which all exists merely as name and form, not precisely unreal, not a hallucination or a dream, but still only a creation of the consciousness, perceptual and subtly sensible rather than substantial. In this poise of the consciousness, all seems to be, if not a dream, yet very much like a representation or puppet show taking place in the calm, motionless, peaceful, indifferent self. Our own phenomenal existence is part of this conceptual movement, a mechanical form of mind and body among other forms. Ourselves, a name of being among other names, automatically mobile in this self, with its all-encompassing, still self-awareness. The active consciousness of the world is not present in this state to our realization because thought has been stilled in us, and therefore our own consciousness is perfectly still and inactive. Whatever we do seems to be purely mechanical, not attended with any conscious origination by our active will and knowledge. Or, if thought occurs, that also happens mechanically, like the rest, like the movement of our body, moved by the unseen springs of nature, as in the plant and element, and not by any active will of our self-existence. For this self is the immobile and does not originate or take part in the action which it allows, and does not originate or take part in the action which it allows. This self is the all, in the sense only of being the infinite one who is, immutably, and contains all names and forms. The basis of this status of consciousness is the mind's exclusive realization of pure self-existence, in which consciousness is at rest, inactive, widely concentrated in pure self-awareness of being, not active and originative of any kind of becoming. Its aspect of knowledge is at rest in the awareness of undifferentiated identity. Its aspect of force and will is at rest in the awareness of unmodifiable immutability. And yet it is aware of names and forms. It is aware of movement. But this movement does not seem to proceed from the self, but to go on by some inherent power of its own, and only to be reflected in the self. In other words, the mental being has put away from himself, by exclusive concentration, the dynamic aspect of consciousness, has taken refuge in the static and built a wall of non-communication between the two, between the passive and the active Brahman. A gulf has been created, and they stand on either side of it, the one visible to the other, but with no contact, no touch of sympathy, no sense of unity between them. Therefore, to the passive self, all conscious being seems to be passive in its nature. All activity seems to be non-conscious in itself, and mechanical, jada, in its movement. The realization of this status is the basis of the ancient Sankhya philosophy, which taught that the Purusha, or conscious soul, is a passive, inactive, immutable entity. Prakriti, or the nature soul, including even the mind and the understanding, active, mutable, mechanical, but reflected in the Purusha, which identifies itself with what is to be reflected in it, and lends to it its own light of consciousness. When the Purusha learns not to identify himself, then Prakriti begins to fall away from its impulsive movement and returns towards equilibrium and rest. The Vedantic view of the same status led to the philosophy of the inactive self, or Brahman, as the one reality, and of all the rest as name and form imposed on it by a false activity of mental illusion, which has to be removed by right knowledge of the immutable self and refusal of the imposition. The two views really differ only in their language and their viewpoint. Substantially, they are the same intellectual generalization from the same spiritual experience. If we rest here, there are only two possible attitudes towards the world. Either we must remain as mere inactive witnesses of the world play, or act in it mechanically, without any participation of the conscious self, and by mere play of the organs of sense and motor action. In the former choice, what we do is to approach as completely as possible to the inactivity of the passive and silent Brahman. We have stilled our mind and silenced the activity of the thought and the disturbances of the heart. We have arrived at an entire inner peace and indifference. We attempt now to still the mechanical action of the life and body, to reduce it to the most meager, minimal possible, so that it may eventually cease entirely and forever. This, the final aim of the ascetic yoga, which refuses life, is evidently not our aim. By the alternative choice, we can have an actively perfect enough in outward appearance, along with an entire inner passivity, peace, mental silence, indifference and cessation of the emotions, absence of choice in the will. To the ordinary mind, this does not seem possible, as, emotionally, it cannot conceive of activity without desire and emotional preference. So, intellectually, it cannot conceive of activity without thought conception, conscious motive, and energizing of the will. But, as a matter of fact, we see that a large part of our own action, as well as the whole activity of inanimate and merely animate life, is done by a mechanical impulse and movement, in which these elements are not, openly at least, at work. It may be said that this is only possible of the purely physical and vital activity. and not of those movements which ordinarily depend upon the functioning of the conceptual and volitional mind, such as speech, writing, and all the intelligent action of human life. But this again is not true, as we find when we are able to go behind the habitual and normal process of our mental nature. It has been found by recent psychological experiment that all these operations can be effected without any conscious origination in the thought and will of the apparent actor. His organs of sense and action, including the speech, become passive instruments for a thought and will other than his.